Well, repeat the question. The presumption is we get an anonymous tip that somebody's got porno and we get a search warrant and a search machine. Well, we'll take that for the assumption that we wouldn't do it. Well, right, well, sure. Anonymous tip isn't enough for us to get a search warrant, but outside of that, we get a complaint from somebody that the guy in the big blue, whoever, I've been on the website and he sent me something. So let's say we got enough to get a search warrant. And you're asking if finding back orifice on his machine is a defense? Well, it'd basically be a defense to the crime. It doesn't mean you didn't commit the crime, and it would be up to you to prove the defense somehow. Of course, you know, as soon as the existence of back orifice was a defense, I'm sure every pedophile in the country would just automatically put back orifice on their machine and say, obviously my enemy did this to me on purpose. Of course, it's kind of hard if you've got, you know, CDs you've burnt and you've got your huge kiddie porn CD collection to claim that, you know, somebody did that to me when I wasn't looking. Do you have any CDs? No. Okay. I shouldn't ask any incriminating questions. I promise I'll do that. Way in the back over here, the guy that looks like a Fed. In my opinion, no and no. I mean, you're on an open public forum that anybody can log into. And that's the old, yeah, before I sell you the dope, man, are you a cop? You know, the cop doesn't have to tell you the truth. No. I mean, do they have to tell the truth then, you're asking? Our Supreme Court here in Nevada says cops can tell you anything they want and to deceive you into telling them. So they don't have to tell you the truth. Is there a legitimate expectation of privacy in a closed IRC? You know, I don't know. I suppose if it was limited to four people, you knew the four people, and somebody was posing as the fourth person that really wasn't the fourth person, might be a question. But I don't know how you prove that you had that legitimate expectation of privacy. Because you can't ID that person by looking at the computer screen. You don't know who it is, other than their handle, right? Well, sure. I mean, we, you know, ask them questions, I guess. But, you know, that's an open forum, pretty much. Who's kind of shifty looking? I'll ask him a question. Way over there.
Okay, I'm sure most of you didn't hear that. It was a kind of statement that roughly to the effect that Kevin Mitnick and his attorney certainly did at some point contribute to the delays in their trial, but the prosecution had made it difficult for them to have access to the evidence. Well, in Arizona, as in many states, but don't take this for gospel because you always need to check the jurisdiction you're in, and the feds play by completely different rules, we have a discovery process that goes on before trial. Basically, they get to see everything that we have. We are theoretically able to see what they have, although that doesn't happen as often. The defense can always ask if they want to for a delay because the prosecution hasn't provided evidence, and the courts will not deny that. Sometimes it's inescapable. For example, in a homicide where somebody is arrested right away, there may be DNA evidence required, and as we all know from the OJ trial, that may take a while. So you're not going to have the DNA results the day after the test, the arrest. You're not going to always have your computer forensics available right at the point where the rules say you should give discovery. But in Arizona, for example, if the prosecution hasn't provided everything, then we have an ongoing duty, according to the rules of court, to continue to provide it as we get it. And the defense has the same obligation in our state because Arizona is not a trial by ambush state. The court rules discourage that, and in fact, they're broadening the discovery rules all the time. But basically, I don't know what the prosecution did in the Mitnick case, But in any criminal trial, there's a great deal of investigating that goes on by both sides after the arrest, and that's sometimes what occasions the delay, whoever has requested the delay. The point is, the defense can always force the prosecution to honor the speedy trial rules, and there are, as I said, some exceptions, but the courts make the decision. The prosecution does not. Okay, we have another speech coming up in here. Is there anyone who's running this? No? Okay.
I don't like a schedule for 5, so.
Okay.
We'll just keep going. Somebody want to comment how nice my tie is? No? Okay. Oh, right here in the front row. Well, releases are an interesting thing, and you can't consent necessarily to something that's like, if you get on a ride, like an amusement park ride, and they know it's broken, and they say, sign a consent, and if you get killed, that consent is not legally effective. Now, by analogy, if they know that link's bad, and they're just trying to get you to go somewhere, and they think that's going to cover them, depends on how full the disclaimer is, but for the most part, I think you could still get sued. I don't think it protects you too much. Why, you have one on your website that says that? No?
The linking and click-through and disclaimer waiver stuff is all completely up in the air right now because the civil lawyers are having a fine time battling that out, and I think we all have to wait and just watch the cases as they come through and see how people sort that out.
Where? I haven't asked anybody over here. Brown shirt.
Well, again, all of these situations are very fact-specific, kind of like Fourth Amendment situations. But if the statute, if they're acting in a way that the statute says they may do to protect their system, now the statute also says they can't just do random monitoring because they feel like it. The phone company can't start listening to telephone calls to see if anybody's ripping them off as a practice. But when an incident is occurring that's a legitimate investigation, they can capture. Now, the real question, both for criminal and civil liability, would be what if they improperly use information that they have captured that's not relevant to the investigation? So system administrators dealing with an incident, whether you're a government agency administrator or corporate, the first thing you should do at the sign of an incident where you're going to tackle any of this is run for the lawyers. Prosecutors, if you're a cop, run for the civil people, the corporate counsel, if you're system administrator in a corporation. There's a lot of very touchy liability stuff that just isn't settled yet.
In all fairness, is there a woman here that would like to ask a question?
Oh, here's one.
All right, here we go.
Okay, the question was, when do they have to notify you that they're going to be listening to your conversations? There are some states that have, either by statute or by case law, that have all-party consent, meaning if there are 5 people in the conversation. Phone company? Okay. If there are 5 people in the conversation, all 5 have to know and agree. Now, if you're in a state like that, then the question would be, do they have this supervisor, phone company, system administrator exception? When we use phone, by the way, now, I no longer care whether it's a phone company or any of the other media, because with all these media converging and internet phone, just, you know, we'll use phone as a generic term for people talking with their voices. So that would be a question that would be completely dependent on the individual state and both the exception and what legislation they may have that governs system administrators in an all-party consent state.
Just by way of information, here in Nevada, it's much easier for me to get a trap and trace than it is to get a full phone tap to listen to what you have. So I can figure out who's calling you and who you're calling with hardly any effort at all to convince somebody to issue me a warrant to I shouldn't tell you this. It's extremely difficult here in Nevada. Yes.
The question was, well, let me see if I can state this right. It related to the number of searches that are done in relation to the number of arrests that arise out of those search warrants. Would that be accurate? Okay. Yeah. Part of the, you've heard already from able counsel on the other side, what a search warrant requires. Basically, they have to go to the judge, and they have to have something called probable cause. Probable cause to believe a crime is being committed, and probable cause to believe evidence of the crime will be found in the place where the crime, where the evidence is stored. Now, one of the misconceptions that I see every time there's a hacker bust from 1980-something on out to today is, well, they did a search warrant, nobody's arrested. That's why they call it a search warrant. They're still looking. And in that situation, perhaps there are 5 search warrants done in a case, and one person may be arrested out of that, and that person may not have been in any of the 5 locations searched. But a judge makes that initial determination, is there enough to justify going to this place to look? There's no punishment for guessing wrong or have been not finding the stuff. For example, the bad guys knew you were coming, and they took off with the meth lab, and now you find an empty house. So a lot of search warrants either are part of a larger case, and you can't really tie the location to who eventually gets arrested. Conversely, there are cases where we do one search warrant, and out of the evidence we find there, 20 people get arrested. An example of that would be a wiretap. It's not uncommon in a drug wiretap for us to wind up with, say, 60 people being indicted out of one, what's essentially a search warrant. Yeah, you had a follow-up? Okay, the question was, are the number of searches in hacking computer-related cases comparable to other types of complex cases, such as drug cases? I really couldn't answer that, because one of the things you find is that the press, and this isn't an insult, but the press is very hot on the bust, you know? The press almost never falls up on what happened in that case. So you may have great publicity on some search, and then without going to the courthouse, you couldn't find out that everybody involved in the case pled guilty quietly with no publicity. The other thing I want to say is that the federal wiretap statutes, which some people are looking at on this, are there more searches than there are indictments? They report the results of those annually. The numbers, this is why you have to remember that statistics lie. The numbers are wildly inaccurate. When you read the press saying that they did, I forget what the number is, but they did 10,000 more wiretaps in the last decade than the one before. Well, you know what happened in the last decade? Pagers. We have to get a full-blown wiretap order to get the numbers off the pager. And you know what? There's lots more pagers than there used to be. But that, does that mean there are, you know, gazillions of people being listened to? If you take the pager statistics out, then you see the true number of wiretaps. And the same problem with the computer search warrants. One of our frustrations in law enforcement is the FBI has never, when we've asked them somehow because nobody could define it as part of the problem, they don't track. We don't have a reporting mechanism for who gets arrested for computer crime. We don't have a reporting mechanism the way we do for wiretap for how many search warrants are executed. There's no way to look this stuff up.
Not to harp on the FBI, but if you don't know, state law enforcement always harps on the FBI. And other feds. There's what's called the Uniform Crime Reporting Form. So everybody that gets murdered or stabbed or sexually assaulted here in Nevada, it gets reported, and the FBI, of course, says statistics are down 7%. Nobody gets reported for computer crime, break-ins, white-collar crime, your average insurance fraud. There's no box to check on the form. So violent crime's down. Nobody's That's a nice wave, by the way. Nobody is reporting and keeping track of whether white-collar fraud is. And on our level, I think that some of those people that used to do the stop and robs that are marginally trainable, maybe the medium-sized bus, it's not that hard to get on the Internet and find out these scams and commit a white-collar scam. Something happens here in Nevada. I can tell you it's happening in a casino right this very second. Somebody has broken into a mailbox in Las Vegas somewhere, stolen somebody's check they've made out to the power company, has scanned it, reprinted it, changed the name on it, and is passing bad paper at every casino in town. That doesn't take a lot of hacker expertise to do, but it's safer than robbing the 7-Eleven. You don't get shot, and you're probably not going to prison, and you're not going to get a gun enhancement. So those statistics are just so misleading, I don't know how to keep track of it. Now, the guy with the nice wave, the Aryan youth over here. In Nevada, as of June 8th, an internet service provider cannot give your information out to anybody else without committing a misdemeanor. Now, does that mean they're not doing it? No. But you'd be surprised how hard it is to get a list of every ISP in Nevada. They're not like in the phone book. So it is technically now against the law for them to send out confidential information or even your web address without your consent. But lots of things get made into laws that don't have big enforcement problems. We got like 2 minutes, so there has to be some, like a really great question. The guy in the black thinks he's got a really great question. Well, I'll let Gail answer. I don't know what the FBI's rules are. In Nevada, we don't have those rules. We can take the equipment. The problem is, 20 years ago, cops got into forfeiting stuff, right? And we all ended up with warehouses full of Yugos that we couldn't do anything with. It's the same way with computer equipment. Okay, you take every system you get. Pretty soon, you got a warehouse full of computer boxes that nobody has the time to look at anyway. So we, for the most part, have quit taking, you know, if it's a porno, child porno guy, we take his equipment. But, you know, we think it's a medical billing company that's ripping off Medicare. We just go in and keep a copy of the hard drive because there's no way for us to haul that equipment away. Well, we threaten to do it, but no, we don't do it. I can't tell you what the FBI is doing. We don't do it here.
The question or the argument here has been going back and forth a little bit. Now, this really is the last question, folks. Has been going back and forth a little bit on the why we see some computers and not others, for example. That whole area of forensics is evolving, and hopefully with the help of the people who are writing better forensics tools and people who are writing better law, including some of them now beginning to be computer literate judges, we will have this worked out so it's a basis of equality for both sides. Don't forget the defense also has access to the evidence, even if it's in the prosecution's hands. We don't even have very good procedures worked out for how we share looking at that evidence without causing each other's cases problems. This is definitely an evolving field, computer forensics, and there are a couple groups that teach it, one even certifies it, but there's no consensus yet on what is the right thing to do in each circumstance, and that's partly because every system, every situation is unique. That's the only answer I can give you. Now, we can't take more questions because it wouldn't be fair to the next speaker whom I want to hear. But I will be here. I will be around until Sunday afternoon. Kevin has to leave, but we can't, as we said, we can't give legal advice. We're just kind of doing the best we can to answer questions. And I'll be around, and feel free to come up and ask later, but we do have to give the next speaker time, so thanks. Oh, and after all the speeches are over and before the evening events, there will be a reunion of the people in 602 and 520 area codes who are on probation and who are not supposed to be here. I'll see you in the bar.